Hello. This is On Irish Road, Episode 1. My name is Lauren. I am the daughter of John Kenneth McClay, who died on April 30th, 2021, in a home in New Bloomfield, Pennsylvania, on Irish Road. The circumstances surrounding my father's death are questionable, even though he had a terminal illness. The days leading up to, actually the years leading up to, and the months after, month and a half, are concerning. We have grave concerns that my father was manipulated. Often he was the manipulator, so that's an interesting turn of events. I think because of that, he was easily manipulated. When the truth is void, and you paint your own pictures of what you want people to think, it makes you more susceptible to outsiders coming in and taking advantage. They were also untruthful about who they were. And I think that the three of them combined, this is a married couple. One was the executor and one was the caretaker. Tried to fleece my dad. I think they sold their own narrative. They saw what he thought was important and they mirrored that. They saw where he was vulnerable and they took advantage of that. And his kids are kind of left holding this big mess at the end. I don't know if my dad would have been okay with that, if that's what he wanted. If these people were intentional flying monkeys, think of the Wizard of Oz doing the bidding of my father. But I do know that we're left with three little pill bottles of ashes, no ceremony. At this point, no obituary, which I'm working on right now. And no access to the life my dad made, mostly without his children. And on the backs of the pain of his children and other people that cared about him at one moment or another. We found out a lot about who he said he was. FBI, DOJ. None of those are true. My dad was a psychologist, which is a scary thought because psychologists are supposed to counsel other people, right? And knowing that there are psychologists out there that might be narcissists, and I'm sure there are, is a scary thought. There's lots of great ones as well. I'm not a therapist, full disclosure. That's probably very obvious. But I do think, in spite of that, it's important to always reach out to mental health professionals when you feel like you just can't handle things. And so I finally did, after years and years of denying myself that because of my dad, knowing him, knowing what he did for a living, for a portion of his life, scared me off of that. I now know that's probably very rare, right? Narcissists are not common, thank goodness, especially not at the level my dad was. And so I'm grateful for that. But it's still a scary thought to think I might be sitting across from somebody that is like my father. So I hope that this podcast does three things. I hope that it brings some healing to myself and my siblings, our family in general, and helps us get through what has been the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with, the death of my father, reconciling the abuse because he was very abusive, the pain, the things we've said to ourselves, the things we've done to ourselves, the decisions we made out of that hurt place. It's never a good thing. And how we try to move forward in lockstep with one another as a family when we were separated and pitted against each other for so many years. I also hope that it helps other people recognize the narcissists they may have in their life, the decisions they may be making, and some of the language revolving around narcissistic personality disorder, some of the coping mechanisms and the tactics that you can use, including no contact, which all three of us did at one point or another to try to save ourselves. Your brain starts to lay out new paths to protect you. And those paths can be very odd winding, you know, the long way versus the shortcut to protect yourself. It's not a good thing often. It's survival mode, trying to just move from point A to point B with as little pain inflicted as possible. And number three, we really believe that something nefarious happened that night and that the intentions of these people were never good. I think they may have told themselves they were, but we have evidence pointing to something different. We're just trying to figure out who they are and if there's a there there. I believe it's likely there is a there there and that we are headed in the direction of at least having some answers. I don't know how far we're going to get in the justice system, but we're going to try. It's our outlet. It's our way to document what we're going through and hopefully maybe help somebody else, if not just ourselves. I want to tell one story about my dad in this episode, and then we'll move on to the letter I wrote my dad yesterday on Father's Day. I think this story kind of points to who he really was and that we weren't alone in the abuses that we felt, but maybe just in the longevity of them as we were in my father's life from the day we were born. And many others were just in his life for a few years. But even in those few years, you can suffer enough abuse and confusion that it can leave you baffled for many, many more years after that. I don't want to, you know, lighten how serious any kind of abuse is for however amount of time you go through it. It's difficult. And he inflicted a lot on a lot of different people, people we probably don't even know yet. So the story is about his second wife. That marriage was ultimately annulled. I'm going to call her M. I don't want her name to be pulled into the story. My father married my mother, and they were married for some years, and then they divorced, and he had many girlfriends in between the two marriages. The second marriage was ultimately annulled, but he met this lovely woman named M. She lived in Kansas. My dad lived in Pennsylvania. I'm in Kansas as well, but she's about 4 hours away. I met her one time. She was lovely, kind. You could tell she was excited about potentially having grandchildren. We all had kids at this point, all three of us. There's myself, my sister, and my brother, and I'm the oldest. And I know that that brought her a lot of excitement because we spoke to her after my father died, and she told us some of this. She did not tell me this story. This came from what would have been her sister-in-law. But this is definitely my dad and something he would do. So she told him when they met that she owned a home in Kansas that was her mother's home, and her mother was still alive, but the deed was in her name. Now, she did not mention, because who would and who cares, that the home was owned by herself and her sisters. So she was not the only name on this, and that home was not paid off. My father hears what he wants to hear and heard, I'm assuming, she has some money. Well, my father had enough money for the two of them, but he was not a giver. He was a definite taker. He only gave if ultimately it meant that he could take more in return. Not just money, but power, influence, control, any of that. So he comes to find out after they're married, and she's been love bombed, right? Probably the best man she's ever met. It's amazing and great that, and he finds this out on a trip back to her home to grab items to take back to his place in Pennsylvania, which he had already had an issue with, that she wanted to bring things there. In classic narcissist fashion, my father believed that everything he had was the best and nothing could be better than that. And why would she want to bring her stuff? Because look at this place, it's great. I spent this on this and this on this and this on this. He wanted everything. He wanted things exactly how he wanted them, and he didn't understand why anybody would want anything different than him. So they had gone back after, I'm sure, much debate. She had convinced him, or he had decided, fine, you can bring some of your stuff. And he comes to find out that the house is in the name of her and her sisters, not just her name. And that the house is not paid off. And he approaches her and he says, "Em, you lied to me." Probably not as nice as I'm saying it. And she said, "What are you talking about?" And he proceeds to tell her that she lied about the home. And she says, "I did not. I didn't think that was important." Well, my dad is infuriated with her. And the next day presents her with an invoice for all their travels, meals, nights out, expenses, itemized. So first of all, a couple of things here. Number one, my dad was tracking, and I believe he did this with everybody in his life. Expenses. There was a transactional importance to everything that happened, money-wise. He focused on money more than anybody I've ever met, and in a horrible way. So he presents her with this invoice and demands 50%. And she's probably completely blown away the fact that it's an accurate historical account of everything they've ever done and the amount of money that was spent on that. And number two, horrified by the fact that he's asking for 50% of it and that he demanded it right there. Well, that was the end of that marriage, as you can imagine. But that's just one of the stories about my dad that are so shocking. And I'm guessing a lot of narcissistic survivors out there have. So I wanted the first episode to just be a little background and to read this letter, because I think this is important. I think having a historical account of how I feel throughout this process is really important for me to look back on. Because this is surely not one of those things that's just going to go away one day. It'll be something that haunts me and my siblings for the rest of our lives. This kind of pain at the worst moment is egregious and devastating and heartbreaking. I hope that somebody finds some peace and information from this, and that it helps somebody move forward in their life. I'm going to read the letter, and that my father will never receive because he is gone. No matter what you think about, you know, what happens to us after we're gone, it's not whether he can hear this. It's knowing for me that he does, that has been taken off the table. And I believe mainly because of the actions of the people that were taking care of him in the end. Not that I would have given him all this information or said all these things to him, but certainly some of them. And more importantly, we wanted to hear what he had to say to us, and that was stolen. That was stolen from us by these people. And you'll know more about how in the next episode. But I want to read this letter. I wrote it to my father yesterday on the first Father's Day since he has been gone. "Dad, today is Father's Day, the first one ever without you. None of them have ever been great because you were not great. Your expectations of us and how you treated us always made it hard to want to talk to you. It's like wanting to be hit in the face, wanting to feel pain, wanting to be humiliated or made to feel less than. At the same time, I have always had a need to talk to you, to make it as normal as possible, hoping every time that we'd be different and I would be good enough that I would have made you proud. I didn't want to miss that moment, the moment you finally loved me and we could just be. So like this idiot you always thought that I was, I went back for more, each time with more hope than before. So here I am on Father's Day, no text to send, no call to make, no hope left. It's over. You're gone. It never came to be. The things I wanted so badly will never happen. Sound advice about everyday life, acceptance as I am, someone to just be there and love me. Talks about hopes and dreams, my kids, my marriage, the world, who you are, what you wanted. Instead, awkward calls where I could feel your disappointment and anger, your disgust with me, with my siblings, my life, my choices, the world, everything. Or you were looking for ammunition to use against us, something bad in my life or Aaron and Mike's to use to insert yourself into the mix in some way that would make you appear to be more helpful and caring. And for years, I trusted that this was true, but no. No, you wanted to just inflict pain and shame on all of us. Sometimes, probably because someone had granted you entry into their lives or told you how great you were, given you the accolades you so desired. On those days, you were kind. Then my hope refilled. I was right there, back at that same idiotic place I often found myself, hoping I was finally enough. But no, it was never to be. So now I find myself whimpering like an injured dog, tears running down my face, writing you a letter you would have never understood alive, and I can't deliver to you in death. Grieving you, worried about my siblings and our futures, dealing with the evil you brought to our doorstep as if we deserved it. It's as if you knew you would be gone and needed to replace your pain that you inflicted on us with a new pain inflicted by the Sundays. You left the three of us, the people who you were supposed to love without hesitation and condition, in devastation. We were a reminder of what you are, what you were, what you could not be, and your failures. You hated us because we knew the truth. The truth is that Dr. Ken McClay was never a former FBI agent, never worked for the DOJ, and was likely not a doctor. He was just John McClay. John McClay, who announced to his family that he was leaving. He abandoned his family, could not handle his responsibilities as a father, husband, or employee. So you fled. You fled your kids, your wife, your job. You decided before you left to inflict as much physical and emotional abuse as possible to remind us we belong to you. I guess. I don't know why. Ken McClay came to be and John McClay came to pass in Pennsylvania. Occasional single abusive father, bachelor, likely annoying but compliant employee, money hoarder, love denier, ladies' man, faithful investor, traveler, just living your best life. All the while, the people you left behind suffered. Financially, Mom was in ruins. Mike was sick. Aaron was just suffering alone as a little girl. I was also alone. Then you would show up, good old Ken or John or both, confused and baffled as to why no one wanted to see you, wanted to make you a meal, hear about your good times, girlfriends, travels. Just good old Ken doing a drive-by on the lives he left behind, taking our hurt and pain and turning it against us, painting whatever picture made you feel best about yourself. All the while, we suffered. We all moved on, but you persisted. You inserted pain and shame anywhere you found room. Then you insisted it was our fault. The physical abuse stopped as we grew older, but the fear surrounding your rage, it persisted. In your presence, I was always that young girl who you threw hot chocolate on at Christmas, or who you admonished in front of other people, who you made lie because you didn't think I was good enough. You threatened to kill me one time. When a woman walked into the room, I prepared to be compared. I found and find myself shaming my own self as though you are here. That constant voice, you are not good enough, smart enough, thin enough, blonde enough, rich enough. Now I know no matter what or who I am, my accomplishments, or character. It was you that you hated. I don't think you ever had the capacity to understand that. But the thing you told us, the things you said to us, the worst things are the things that you needed to say to yourself. You just didn't have the courage or the capacity. I hear myself and I loathe that I sound like a victim. I hate that that comes through. I have accomplished so much. I am good enough. I am kind. I love my life. Not every part, but no one does. All of us are projects. I know I will be fine. I pity you for not understanding that life is about experiences, love, and mostly about growing ourselves to be more to those around us. I wanted to want to hug you. I wanted to want to love you. I wanted to want to make you a meal. I wanted to watch you in your final days. I wanted to do that, to take care of you. But at some point, I realized it was you that had not accomplished anything worth noting. You failed at the only thing that ever mattered, to be a good and kind person. I used to explain it away because of Milton Hershey and the abuse, but then how do you explain me? I was abused, I worked and went to school, and you abandoned me. I raised myself. So here I am, hurt and angry, not doing the same. These days are over, the days that you can hurt us. You are gone, and I am moving on. It's almost fitting that you found the Sundays, or that they found you. Three unhappy people lying about their reality, feeding off of each other. If we did not love you, it would have ended there, but we do love you. That is the part that is the worst to reconcile. We love you. You hurt us. It's gone. It's over. Those days, some of those feelings. I held your hand after you passed away for 2 hours. While your guardian angel, or angel of death, Julie, apparently you were calling her mommy, patted me across your body and told me how she had gotten mom into the will. She cried not one tear. I cried all the tears. I will never forget hearing Aaron screaming. I'll never get that out of my head. And seeing your once blue eyes, now yellow from death. Yet we forgive you, and they played you. You hurt us. They hurt us, but we loved you. We loved you all along. That, for all of us, was never to be. I mourn what was never to be. I mourn the moments that could have been. You really missed out, Dad. I hate that. I hate that it could have been so much more. I will miss you. I will want to send you pictures, and I will want some of those empty moments where hope lived but then ultimately died. I wish so desperately I could have said goodbye and told you I loved you. I really loved you. All I ever wanted was for you to love me back. I just wanted to be your daughter. Goodbye, Dad. I hope you found some peace. I hope you know we came to you. I hope you know we came to tell you we loved you and to say goodbye. Rest easy, Dad. I love you. So that's it for the first episode. The next one will go a little bit more into